Questions are all around us.
Learn.
Why is liquid cold?
Learn.
What is maths?
Learn.
Why does this, hurt?
Learn.
What is the Enlightenment?
I don't know.
And now, thanks to the University of Auckland, it's time to ready, steady, learn.
Yes, indeed. And in the studio this morning, we have got Robin Murphy, who is a PhD student in the School of Pharmacy, exploring the benefits or the effects of LSD microdosing. Kia ora, Robin. How are you?
Kia ora, good.
It is very nice to have you in here today. Now, explain to us a little bit about this research, because it's got long histories, and this is, I think, the first trial that we're seeing in New Zealand. Is that right?
Yeah, so the practice of microdosing is, in this case, taking a small amount of a psychedelic drug, but not enough to get any of the sort of psychedelic effects or the typical things that you would think about,
yeah.
No consciousness altering or perception altering effects. The sort of history of it is that, well, there's rumours that Albert Hofmann, who is the original person to synthesise LSD, took small amounts of LSD kind of throughout his life.
Right, okay.
But the sort of the protocol that's been formalized was put forward by a guy called James Fadiman, who was a grad student doing the sort of original 60s research in California.
Mm.
And then when it got shut down, he was still really interested in it, and he put forward this protocol online and got people to send him in their experiences. So it's kind of taken off from there. He published a book about it, and there's a huge growth of people sort of doing it illegally, on their own. There's big forums and things like that. So yeah.
So this is kind of, I guess, taking something that is definitely already happening in the world and trying to put it into a clinical procedure to get some more, I guess, concrete data around it. And I guess you're probably coming up against quite a bit of people's preconceptions about the whole thing. How has that process been for you, Robin?
You know, I feel like in terms of like the people who have applied, we've encountered people from like all walks of life who are really open-minded about it. So I do feel like while people have these sort of preconceived notions of things like LSD, the tide is kind of turning, or, you know, we're getting a lot of people who experimented with things when they were young, and it's not like a lifestyle thing that they've continued to do, but they're interested in trying it in a therapeutic context or in a clinical context.
Yeah, and what is some of these therapeutic properties that you're trying to sort of explore here? Because it seems to be for depression and anxiety that this is often the targeted audience. What is the kind of therapeutic side of this?
Yeah, so we're actually, just to be clear, our study is just in healthy adults who don't have any kind of mental or physical health issues.
Got you.
So the stuff that people report online, it kind of breaks into two kind of categories of like self-improvement or self-optimization, and then self-treatment. And so just because this is the very first study like this, we're focusing on that more sort of people who are healthy but are trying to sort of self-optimize. So we're looking at things like cognitive benefits, focus, creativity, general mood stuff, things like that. A lot of the media has kind of focused around that in terms of what people are doing in like Silicon Valley and things like that, using it as a productivity enhancer. But actually, in terms of what people are actually doing in the wild, a lot of people are using it for these treatment benefits of like depression, anxiety, people using it to manage ADHD, things like that. So the next sort of round of research after that is to then take that seriously and really look at what the potential therapeutic benefits could be.
So there's one thing that we were talking about off air that has been maybe a wee bit contentious, is it's only male participants that you're looking for in this study. So what's the background to that? Why just looking at male participants?
Yeah, so I really appreciate the like frustration of people who have voiced it to me, because I totally feel that as well, when you sort of see that something's only open for men. But so the reasoning behind that is, part of the motivation for this study is to try and figure out what the actual mechanism in the brain of these potential benefits are. And so to do that, we're looking at this construct called brain plasticity. So it's the idea that the brain can change as we take on board new information. So we have a way of studying that using electroencephalography, which is where we put electrodes on the scalp and we look at the brain electrical activity. And so the paradigms that we have for doing that, other research in our lab has found that it does significantly fluctuate over a menstrual cycle.
Right.
And so if we were to include women and anyone who menstruates, we'd have to get 3 months of menstrual cycle data and then sync people up to be starting. And so it just logistically and funding wise,
beyond the scope of the funding,
So we have to work within those constraints, but that's not to say that this is where the research finishes. This is just the very first thing. We're just looking at this kind of mechanism in this instance, and then as the research goes forward, it absolutely will encompass everyone. So,
and who are some of the, I guess, like, interested parties? As you said, in the wild, you've got people doing this illegally already, but what's the, I guess, down the track, what are some of the potential uses of this data? What could it be used for in the future?
So, definitely, I think people are looking into using it as a substitute for orthodox anxiety and depression treatments. And using it in the same sort of way that they're given, where it's just you're given it and you just go off and that's what you take. But then also people are looking at it as an adjunct to psychotherapy. So our colleagues are looking at it with doing microdosing with a course of therapy for palliative care. There's potential for it to be kind of used in a lot of different ways.
This sounds like really interesting research, Robin. How can people be involved? Because I know you were looking for participants at the moment.
Yeah, so we still are actively recruiting. So if you're interested, you can go to our Facebook page, which it's a bit of a mouthful, but it's the Auckland Neuropsychopharmacology Research Group.
Nice. Snappy.
Really rolls off the tongue. There's a link there where you can fill out a pre-screening questionnaire. We have had a large volume of interest, so if you're not eligible, I won't be able to get back to you, but if you potentially are, then I will, and we can have a conversation about it.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming in to chat to us about it this morning, Robin, and best of luck with the rest of your research. Have a lovely rest of your Tuesday as well.
Thanks.
That was Ready, Steady, Learn, thanks to the University of Auckland, the best university.
And